From the Atlantic to the Pacific, from mountain crest to mountain crest, from the canyons to the clouds and into the cosmos, we are pumping wattage high and low, plus streaming worldwide on the internet and keeping you company tonight. I'm your host, Vance Pollock, and this is Joshua P. Warren speaking of strange, giving you the latest and discussing the weirdest. We have assembled the finest team of reporters and most intriguing guests. We are the favorite program of hootenoggers, wendigos, skunk apes, and donkey devils, and benevolent space brothers. So keep it tuned right here in the studio with Investigator Shelley Wright and Sam the Animal Steel. I was trying to tie things up there. I got a little carried away during the last segment. Sorry about that, Sam. Trying to tie up loose ends about where I'm going with this Ghosts of Mississippi business. And we left off on the top of the Blue Ridge Parkway in the shadow of Mount Pisgah at Buck Spring. And Buck Spring Lodge was actually a huge palatial hunting estate belonging to George Vanderbilt, right up there, like I say, in the shadow of Mount Pisgah. And the remnants of that lodge were finally razed, destroyed along in the 60s or 70s, I guess. There were still some ruins and things, but the only thing, for the most part, up there at the Buck Spring Overlook now are foundations. It's pretty cool if you follow some of the trails down through the woods. They're the old stone foundations of this 100-year-old hunting lodge are there, and there's a nice historical marker up near the overlook with some photographs of the lodge, the way it looked. Oh man, that was a very ritzy place. As you can imagine, if George Vanderbilt's going to invite you out to his hunting lodge, can you imagine what that's going to be like? It was impressive. But the only standing structure now is the spring house, and it appears to have been restored within the last 25-30 years, I would say. But it's got the wood shingles, and it's still old looking. But when I was at the spring house, we captured some photographs of some peculiar orbs, peculiar enough that I mentioned it to my buddy Rick Russell and showed him some photographs, and he said, "You got to find out who that is." And he said, "Any idea?" And I said, I had pitched it to Josh like this one time when I had taken him some souvenirs for Joshua P. Warren's Mystery Museum. The Asheville Mystery Museum is included as a part of any Haunted Asheville tour. So if you book and take a tour, Haunted Asheville, that's all the Joshua P. Warren original haunted local stories. So if you are going to take a ghost tour around Asheville, it should be the original and oldest haunted Asheville, by Joshua P. Warren. So Josh isn't in town giving the tours right now. He usually does a couple of tours around Halloween time. Josh is back in Puerto Rico, but they're in the capable hands of some other guides. Tad McDivitt, for instance, a great tour guide and great conversationalist, great storyteller. So Tad and some other guides with the Haunted Asheville. You can go to hauntedasheville.com to learn all about that. But included in that tour is the Joshua P. Warren Asheville Mystery Museum. That's downstairs in the Masonic Temple at the corner of Broadway. And in there are all kinds of weird stuff. And some of the weird stuff that I dropped off in there a few years back that doesn't really have a placard or an explanation of just what it is, but a couple of silver tags with some letters, a serial number, and the name of a funeral home on them. What those are crematory tags. When they incinerate your dead body and they crush up the bones, you realize they do have to do that after they incinerate you and pull you out of the crematorium. Your bones don't just completely turn to dust. There's still chunks of bones and everything that they have to crush up.
I didn't know that.
To get the cremains, they sift they sift through what's left in the oven when they pull it out, and then there will be some other chunks of, and you got to think about people who have like artificial hips and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Those are still there. I knew a guy who worked in a crematorium, and he had a collection of artificial joints and hips and titanium and stuff like that that he had kept, because you want to bust up and grind up all the bone to smaller pieces so that you can.
I guess you'd have to take out.
Is that kind of distasteful?
It really is. It is. And the thought that maybe your ashes could get mixed up with somebody else's ashes.
Right.
Don't they have to take pacemakers out before they put them in there?
I don't know the detail. You would think so. You would think that there are things that probably don't need to be shoved into that oven. But, they have to crush up, grind up some of the remains because the fire itself doesn't reduce everything to the fine grade of ash that is then delivered to the next of kin or scattered, you know, to the winds. But my pitch in bringing these coins, these tokens to Josh, I said, here are a couple of crematory tokens that I've picked up locally. Or one of them is a crematory token for one of my brother's neighbors, whose widow said he wanted to have his ashes scattered in the mountains in North Carolina, and my brother volunteered me. He said, well, my brother lives up there. Next time he comes to town, I'll send your husband's ashes back to the mountains.
Nice.
And I said, yeah, I'll do that. Sure, why not? So I went up there to Buck Spring, to the Overlook, and stood along in front of the wall there and just opened up the plastic bag and dumped his ashes off the cliff there. It's about a 75-foot drop. And when his ashes hit at the bottom of that cliff there, there was a gust of wind that came up the valley, and the ashes actually rose on the wind. It was one of the strangest things I've ever seen. I had to like jump up and run so I didn't get choked on this cloud of human remains that were lifted to the sky. It was kind of bizarre, but I told Josh, you know, Asheville, in more ways than one, when people are passing through this beautiful city, they're always breathing human ashes, because there's probably, on the East Coast at least, no single place that is a more popular spot to have your ashes scattered than right here in the mountains. Every day, I dare say, there are people scattering ashes along the Blue Ridge Parkway. So when you visit Asheville, North Carolina, you're breathing the cremated remains of
all that these cheerful
people. Yeah, that's a cheerful thought. That's what I told Josh. You need these for a display in the museum, these crematory tags. One of them I actually found in a pile of remains up there by Buck Spring Lodge and took that. And I didn't think anything of it, but Rick was like, you know, maybe those people have a problem with you taking their tag from the pile of remains. And I said, well, you know, it would have just laid there, you know, in the woods, and maybe it should have. But when he mentioned that, it occurred to me, and this tag is in the Joshua P. Warren Mystery Museum. It's from a funeral home in Tupelo, Mississippi. Now, Tupelo, Mississippi is the birthplace of Elvis Presley. But it's also not too far from this little central Mississippi, Tallahatchie River, the synchronicity of these spirits that we keep bumping into up here. So if it turns out that we have photographed orbs representing the spirit from which I purloined the crematory tag from their pile of ashes up there on the parkway, then we've really got into it with these ghosts of Mississippi. So anyway, that's my pitch, is that some of these recent photographs, and I'll get them out there on maybe on the Free Museum Facebook page. That's a good place to look for it. Because, of course, there's a Speaking of Strange Facebook page, but there's also the Asheville Mystery Museum page, which is pretty good. So you could go like facebook.com/group/mysterymuseum, and that'll take you to Joshua P. Warren's Asheville Mystery Museum page. And yeah, maybe I'll do some follow up, put those orb photos out there for you to investigate. And maybe Shelley, you and I have some business up there at Buck Spring Lodge. Maybe we've got to take that tag back up there and bury it in the woods.
Probably do. At the very least, we should probably go to the museum and say some words. Apologize.
I just thought it was kind of nice, a shiny little medallion, and it was the first one I had ever seen before. I had never handled human remains before, but then
I
had never before. It seems like I would have had opportunity to do so. I would have, given the opportunity, I would have handled human remains.
Believe you me, I would have been handling the remains had I had an opportunity.
Yeah, I had a buddy in high school, or he was a few years older than me, but when I was in high school, I knew a guy that worked for MedX, which is a bio-waste disposal company down in Florida.
Yes, to lick off all the needles and stuff.
Well, he said that they did like an initiation thing where the first amputated leg that they get in when there's a new guy,
they
take it out of the bag and they make you hold the amputated leg by like the bone and walk the amputated leg down the hallway.
I mean, like Tyler Durden would make soap out of the the fat.
The liposuction fat.
But
right?
What do they do with like amputated limbs and stuff?
I guess they just go to the incinerator. That's what I'm thinking. They just take that stuff and burn it. But he had this story about an initiation ritual where the first amputated leg that comes in, the new hires have to hold this take the leg out of the bag and hold it by the bone and do something called the walk across.
Nice.
We kind of enjoyed telling the story about doing the walk across, because Tom was a special guy, and he worked at MedX for most of the time. He was out of prison for that hitch, I think. Anyway, I think maybe I should not be picking up things that belong to the dead, and maybe Shelley and I will return that token. Coming back in just a little while after this break, and I'll tell you some more weird ghosty stories from the Vance Files. You're listening to Speaking of Strange. Welcome back. Joshua P. Warren, Speaking of Strange. I'm your host, Vance Pollock. We've been talking a little bit about human remains, encounters with human remains, and off mic, the gay banter continued. Conversations about human remains. I'm sure you've seen this, Sam, that you can send some of your ashes off and have them pressed into a record.
No.
Yeah.
That's
cool. Pretty cool. It's like I've seen some photographs of it, like a clear disc. You can get like a 12-inch record, you know, vinyl with some of your ashes in there. So it's kind of like a marbleized.
Yeah, I subscribed to a newsletter from this pressing plant, and they show their new, you know, products, like their new marble or metallic looking. Like so many options.
Right.
Some super cool stuff, like Jack White level cool, like that one that he did that had the blood in the middle. It was like a hollow record that had red liquid.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Why, of all the things to say ooh about, like that's, you're like, ew, a red liquid record.
That's not, that's actually not the first thing I've said ew about tonight. There's a story in there.
She is going through the Dark 30 material after all, yeah. Yeah, blood inside the record. I saw that. That was pretty cool. But you haven't seen the human, your remains preserved in a record.
Well, I'm still alive, so I've not seen my remains in a record.
Well,
but if
the
you
news
lop
release
off your
about,
finger.
Yeah, I guess you could listen to a record made with Porsche. If you had that amputated leg we were talking about in the last
segment. If I had my ear amputated and then made into a record, but I couldn't listen to it because I didn't have an ear.
Wow, that's irony. That was a Twilight Zone episode, I think, or Night Gallery.
I think Meredith was in that one.
Tales from the Dark Side. Oh, goodness. Yeah, you were talking about, you know, a lady who does some art with remains. That sounded cool to me.
A good friend of mine, Elise, she's got, she's a very talented glass artist in the Light Glass Works. She started a couple years ago, like a good friend of hers gave her some ashes, some remains of her husband, and was like, you know, I'd like to, you know, instead of scattering all of them, like have some of them to remember him by, you know, can you do something with it? And at the time, she had never done any, you know, art. I mean, it's art for sure, but she didn't know, like, how to incorporate it. How would it act? Because, you know, like a powdered bone and stuff it could burn very easily. You know, you don't know all this stuff. And you want to be very respectful and protective of the little bit of that you have.
Right. Basically, it was just a new medium that she had never worked in.
And so, like, the trial and error level is, you know, there's not as much as if you're working with, you know, something else that's readily available.
Right.
So she figured out a way to, you know, incorporate it into some, like, art that she'd already done, like these big glass, orbs. They're kind of like paperweight, big round, like a small bowling ball kind of thing, like, and they have all sorts of swirls and cool things in them, and she can put the ashes in there. She's done jewelry and pets, humans. It's a very popular industry now. Like you were saying with the records, people want to remember their loved ones. I always thought it'd be cool. Like if I go to, like, you know, I don't know how much it would cost to tax. I don't think you're allowed to taxidermy a human, but I thought it'd be kind of cool just to be like, stuff me and stick me in the corner, use me as like, dress me up, you know, like use me as a coat rack or something. You know, like you could dress me up like Frankenstein, like make my arms hinges so I can like go straight out, you know.
Yeah, the articulated Sam Steele.
How cool would that be, though?
That would be pretty cool. It seems like with your prior approval, written permission or whatever, they could do something like that. I mean, it's
no. I recall like a Jackass or something where they tried to, where Johnny Knoxville was like dressed up as the old guy, I think, and he had like, who was this old lady who was supposed to be his dead wife, and he's like taking her to different taxidermy places to shop around how much it would cost to have her stuff.
Oh my goodness.
But they weren't in on the joke, obviously, which was the fun of that one.
But your friend's, glass business. I mean, it brings to mind the idea of like a crystal ball with some remains of your loved one or pet or whatever in there.
What it looks like, yeah. Like a crystal ball with, you pick out like colors that you might like and, you know, different patterns that she can swirl and.
In the Light Glass Works?
Yeah. Her name's Elise. You can find her online. I think she's going out of the country next week. She's all over the world doing stuff with the glass. And
but that sounds like a very, you know, important, specialized skill, you know, to deal in that
and
medium.
This whole thing started when we were talking off the air about the weird ball of bone ash that I found.
Mm-hmm.
I was working a gig, and I was like my first big Warren Haynes Christmas Jam gig with like big names on it, you know, and you don't know all of them, but you know, like I don't know who that guy is, but he's big time, you know. Like,
yeah, he's probably shared a stage with Jerry Garcia or some members of the Dead.
There was some members of the Dead at this. I think I want to say it was Phil Lesh, but and then at the end of the night they have the big jam with like everybody comes out and the whole stage is just full of people. This is I'm a green rookie. And so they say, game on! And you just rush up there and you start ripping mics down and rolling up cable. I mean, it's chaos. And in the chaos, this thing comes flying past me on the stage. This is like a marble type thing or something. And it's about to go flying. So I hit with my foot, stick it out, and just grab it. Didn't even look at it, really. Just shoved it in my sweatshirt pocket. Got real hot, took out my sweatshirt, threw it off. Didn't even think about it again. The next day, I'm like beat up from the feet up. And I'm like, oh, put my wet clothes in the water. I'm like, oh, what is this? And I couldn't, it was like this glass ball with some, I was like, ooh, drugs. So, but I'm like, there's no way to, that's a stupid container for drugs. You can't get the drugs out. That's just ridiculous. And so I start looking at it more, and it's kind of like a hippie looking thing, like a smaller version of what Elise does, but like hollow. So there was some powder in there. And I was like, what is that? Is that like cocaine? No, that's bone. Oh my goodness. It was like some sort of remains, human animal. I was like, that could be Jerry Garcia's remains. Phil Lesh could have dropped that out of his pocket and be looking for Jerry.
Right.
So I felt bad about keeping it without trying at least to find out whose it was so they could go back to its rightful home. Sent out emails to all the tour, you know, managers for each band and asked, hey, did y'all lose a glass ball of your grandma or some remain? Nobody got back to me, so I was like, that's the universe telling me to keep it. And so it lives in my room now in a skull. It fits perfectly in the eyeball socket of a skull, and it looks like the skull has an eye, but the eyes is filled with somebody's dead remains.
That's kind of morbid, kind of cool.
Yeah.
And I think the Grateful Dead, I think the Dead would be grateful to you for
well,
for
it could have been somebody in the audience whose, you know, best friend was like a big fan.
Right. And it's not like you defiled them or mistreated them.
It's being very well kept.
That's kind of neat. And who knows? It may be that you you told that story tonight and somebody can be like, "Ooh, I've been missing that for a great many years."
It has kind of bugged, not as much, but I mean, sometimes I'm like, you know, if somebody just threw it up there being like, I hope Phil Lesh catches this or something, or Warren, you know, I wouldn't care. But like, if it was somebody's that they carried with them all the time and they lost it and they've been looking for it, that would bother me. So like, I would love to, if that ever came up.
If somebody were to get wind of this, and we're sincere about it, do you think you could hear the sincerity in their voice if they wanted to reach out to you?
Describe it a little bit.
You think that they could probably do that?
You know, there's a couple things that would be descriptive about it.
Right.
Size,
okay.
Shape, color.
Okay, so there you go. If you lost a glass
this
bead
would've been,
with some human remains
6 years ago
at a concert.
It's like 2011, 12, something like that. Warren Haynes Christmas Jam.
Yeah, reach out.
Touch me.
You are listening to Joshua P. Warren Speaking of Strange. I'm Vance Pollock in the studio with investigator Shelley Wright. Shelley's getting ready to unleash the Dark 30 matter on us here in just a little while. And, who knows what we're up to next segment, but you should hang tight and be surprised along with the rest of us. We'll be right back. back to Speaking of Strange. I think we can get into a little bit of personal spirit communication stuff this segment. Second hour, Speaking of Strange, Dark 30 coming up next hour. Yeah, it's gonna get seedy. It's going to get unseemly. It's going to offend
seedier
you.
Seedier than our off-air banter?
No. No, the off-air banter has been exceedingly seedy this evening. Yeah, good stuff. Always leave it to Sam to entertain beyond the realm of Speaking of Strange, beyond what you get here. We need to do like a special subscription only. If we did like a subscription only unrated podcast version with Sam's off mic stories, yeah, you would have to pay for that content.
But you'd love it.
Oh, yeah, it's great. what was I going to tell you about? Oh, yeah, a couple weeks ago, I did a reading from a few Strange books, the Ambrose and Enola books. And I told you that those were done up in a little print shop on Patton Avenue. I called it the Parkway Press. And we'll go with that again, because like I say, not all stories about families in Asheville are flattering sort of stories. Thomas Wolfe knew that when he wrote, even under different names, when he wrote Look Homeward, Angel, that offended a lot of people because it was a direct telling and commentary, editorializing about the deeds of illustrious families in Asheville. And this is true. This is a family who has been in the print business in Asheville for pushing 100 years, 90 years or so. But in the 1930s, they ran this little print shop down on Patton Avenue. And Ray and Gladys, the owners of the shop, that printed the Ambrose and Enola channels. I read a couple of these channeled messages. Interesting that Asheville in the 1930s, a place that you would associate with, very Southern, very Bible Belt type thing, would have a small print shop that was publishing this sort of spiritualist, channeled messages, rather bizarre literature that's still floating around out there. And there are a few collectors, myself among them, that like these small press sort of channeled messages. I've got, probably dozens, if not hundreds, of examples of this sort of stuff that was published in the last century. But Gladys and Ray, the shopkeepers, had no children. So in along in about 1935, they adopted a young girl from South Carolina. And we'll call her, what's a good name? Sharon. They adopted Sharon from Columbia, South Carolina.
Are you doing that for anonymity purposes?
Yeah,
or you just
right.
Not remember.
I
her
am.
Name?
I'm okay. Doing that. I'm doing that as to not reveal the name of this a young lady who is, well, certainly not a young lady now by any stretch of the term, but certainly is still living. Still known to some people in the Asheville community. But here's the thing. She had not been in touch with any of her family in Asheville for a great many years. Probably been close to 70 years since she had been in touch with anybody around Asheville, because she had grown up and graduated high school and moved away, and her adoptive father had divorced her adoptive mother in the meantime and remarried, had another family, and his children growing up had no clue. Well, not quite true. The older daughter did know. She had gleaned some insight about their father's previous life, but some of the younger children didn't even realize that their father had been married and that they would have had what amounts to an adopted stepsister, a much older adopted stepsister. He had an entire other life before they came along. So anyway, let's get this all straight. I'm speaking with the son of this gentleman who has been dead and gone for many years. And the son is alive, and I'm speaking to him as a real life human being. To hear me say that I was talking to the spirit of this guy that's been dead for a long time, years, that might be the sort of offhanded remark I might make. But no, I'm talking to the son who is still living, about the father who has been dead for a great many years. And he says, I ran across a photograph of my father and his first wife, Gladys, and the little girl they adopted, Sharon. And he says, I wonder whatever happened to her. And I said, I would like to know also. And I had done the research and barely found any evidence that she even existed. But I talked to some people, some elderly people who had gone to high school with her, remembered her, and say that after high school, she left. She moved away from Asheville. I couldn't come up with a good way to track her down, to find out where she was. So I'm in the building on Patton Avenue. It just so happens that the building where their press was publishing these things, these spirit communications back in the 30s, is now Jack of the Woods. So we got permission, me and some of the Lemur associates. Joshua was not with us at this time, but me and some former Lemur associates, that's the League of Energy Materialization and Unexplained Phenomena Research, for those in the know. Shelley, you're in Lemur, aren't you?
I'm in Lemur, but this was way before my time.
Lemur is kind of on hiatus. Lemur is out there. I don't think Lemur will ever completely go away.
Is that an acronym?
The acronym Lemur. And I think maybe it's because Josh likes lemurs also, the animals.
What's the acronym?
The League of Energy Materialization and Unexplained Phenomena Research.
Where's the
Lemur?
The P
is silent. Yeah, it's like why you can't hear a pterodactyl go into the bathroom, because the P is silent.
Ah.
Okay. So anyways, I go into Jack of the Woods after hours, and we're doing the EMF meters and the typical ghost communication stuff, which is kind of cliche. And I think a lot of that stuff is like, so what? So you got a light, you got an LED to light up in this corner. But I went to a storage room upstairs, to a quiet place, and I stared out that window pane that must have been there 75 years ago, and imagine that I was standing in this spot that Gladys stood, 75 years ago. And I asked her, Gladys, I knew she was dead and gone. And I said, Gladys, where is your daughter, Sharon? Where is your adopted daughter, Sharon? Her stepbrother would like to know whatever happened to Sharon. And I consciously, asked this question to Gladys's spirit. And the next day I woke up with a sort of fresh concept to go back down to the courthouse instead of looking in the regular the place where they keep the birth records and the marriage. Instead of going into the register of deeds, don't go in the register of deeds, go into the small claims section of the courthouse and pull some records and look for her in there. I don't know what I was even looking for, but you know what? I went into that tiny little room that's in the back of the house where the small claims records are kept, and I pulled out one of these huge dusty index volumes from the 1930s, and I looked up this couple, and I found them in the index. And I told the clerk there, I asked the little lady, I said, I want to see this record that's indexed here. And she says, you see those boxes, those metal boxes up on the wall there? Can you reach that one? And she points way up on the wall in one of these old, like, Kelly Green, like, military green metal filing folders that's actually in the cabinets are built into the wall. She points up to one that's almost out of my reach, but I reached up there and pulled it out. And when I did pull this thing out, coal dust, black dust, literally fell out in our face because the file had not been pulled in probably 75 years. And what we found inside that box in the small claims court archives here in Buncombe County, pretty amazing. And the punchline is coming right after this break. You're listening to Speaking of Strange. Welcome back to the final segment of Hour 2, Speaking of Strange. I'm Vance Pollock, your host. We're talking about me putting out the call for a little intel from the spirit world on where young Sharon ever ended up. She was the adopted daughter of Ray and Gladys that ran the little print shop down on Patton Avenue, the print shop that was responsible for some psychic messages back in the 30s. So I thought, well, maybe if Gladys went in for that sort of thing, she's still out there. Maybe she'll help me get through. I was going to pass a message along to the family when it was brought to my attention that, well, they would like to know whatever happened to Sharon, who would have been their much older adoptive stepsister.
Do they have a way to get in touch with you?
Did the dead have a way to get in touch with
them?
They find ways.
I knew that
the living one.
the relatives of the people who ran the print shop, even though I knew this background on them, it just so happened that I was going to the same sandwich shop as they went to practically 3 or 4 days a week. And I was talking to the owner of the sandwich shop, and he said, oh, yeah, so-and-so, again, the son, is a friend of mine. And I said, okay, really? I said, well, next time I'm in here having a sandwich and he happens to be in here, well, why don't you introduce us? And so that's how it happened. It wasn't a forced thing. It was a matter of fact, hey, I happen to know that your dad was publishing channeled messages here in Asheville back in the 30s, some pretty bizarre stuff. Oh, yeah, really? And so he introduced us on those terms the next time we happened to be having lunch in this little sandwich shop. So, yeah, I gradually got to chat with the fellow a little bit, and he said, I'd like to know what happened to my sister. Well, I mean, you know, your dad raised this girl before you were born, and you knew nothing about her until you were a grown man. And then somebody says, oh, yeah, by the way, your father had a previous life. He had been married before and adopted a daughter. This is pretty interesting stuff, you know, that had just kind of fallen by the wayside. So I go into the small claims archives in the old Buncombe County courthouse, and I find their names in an index, and I pull down this metal drawer out of the wall. It's like the filing cabinets are actually built into the walls from before World War II. This is, you know, late 20s stuff, and it's these steel filing drawers built into the walls, and I reach up and I pull one out, and the black coal dust from when they used to heat the courthouse with coal has settled in this drawer, and it falls out in our face, and I'm like, wow, that drawer hasn't been opened in a few years. And she said, no, I don't think so. And I pull out an envelope that's tied up with string, and it's covered in this black coal dust, and I open it and pull the papers out, unfold them, and here is a copy of the adoption records for this young girl who I was seeking information on. And it has a birth date, and it has a birth name. And so with that birth date and original name and the assumed name, when they adopted her, they changed her name. So I've got her birth date and her adoptive name and her date of birth from this record. And I'm able to find her with that bit of information. And I call her up on the phone and I say, hi there, I'm a historian from Asheville, North Carolina. What can you tell me about your adoptive mother, Gladys? And she said, the last time I saw Gladys was in the basement of our house out in Montford, and she was trying to shove me into the furnace.
What?
Yeah. Gladys had lost her mind and gone insane, thought that their adopted daughter was devil-possessed, and was trying to burn her alive in the furnace.
Wow.
She said, the last time I saw Gladys, and she was very tearful. You know, I mean, within the first couple minutes, I called her up and I said, whatever happened
Good
to Gladys?
You just make
last time
out
I saw
blue.
Gladys, she was trying to shove me in a furnace. And, yeah.
Boy, did you feel like an ass.
I said, yeah, well.
So where does it go from there?
Yeah. Well, what can I say?
And then I'm sure she said, well, how did you find me? How did you? Oh, well, I put the word out to your dead mother.
Gladys wanted to apologize. Basically is what I told her. I said, Gladys was nuts, and she's apparently offering an apology. But I did put her in touch with some of her much younger siblings, and it was a warm reunion all around. Good times were had by all. And
were you invited?
No, it was just kind of a swap Christmas cards sort of reunion. Yeah, but
that's
nobody was burned alive in a furnace.
That's thank God.
So all's well that ends well.
Yep, there you have it.
And coming up, the Dark 30 Hour. Stay tuned.